Chapter 31. Keep to the record. If you long for it now, that's enough. Am I answered that you are ready to be placed at once under some proper tutor? Is that it? I stammered, yes, that was it. Good. Now, your inclinations are to be consulted. I don't think that wise, mind, but it's my trust. Have you ever heard of any tutor whom you would prefer to another? I had never heard of any tutor but Biddy and Mr. Wopsle's cretonne, so I replied in the negative. There is a certain tutor, of whom I have some knowledge, who I think might suit the purpose, said Mr. Jaggers. I don't recommend him, observe, because I never recommend anybody. The gentleman I speak of is one Mr. Matthew Pocket. Ah, I caught at the name directly. Miss Havisham's relation. The Matthew whom Mr. and Mrs. Camilla had spoken of. The Matthew whose place was to be at Miss Havisham's head when she lay dead in her bride's dress on the bride's table. You know the name? Said Mr. Jaggers, looking shrewdly at me, and then shutting up his eyes while he waited for my answer. My answer was that I had heard of the name. Oh, said he, you have heard of the name. But the question is, what do you say of it? I said, or tried to say, that I was much obliged to him for his recommendation. No, my young friend, he interrupted, shaking his great head very slowly. Recollect yourself. Not recollecting myself, I began again, that I was much obliged to him for his recommendation. No, my young friend, he interrupted, shaking his head and frowning and smiling both at once. No, 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 it's very well done, but it won't do. You are too young to fix me with it. Recommendation is not the word, Mr. Pip. Try another. Correcting myself, I said that I was much obliged to him for his mention of Mr. Matthew Pocket. That's more like it, cried Mr. Jaggers. And I added, I would gladly try that gentleman. Good. You had better try him in his own house. The way shall be prepared for you, and you can see his son first, who is in London. When will you come to London? I said, glancing at Joe, who stood looking on, motionless, that I supposed I could come directly. First, said Mr. Jaggers, you should have some new clothes to come in, and they should not be working clothes. Say this day week. You'll want some money. Shall I leave you 20 guineas? He produced a long purse, with the greatest coolness, and counted them out on the table, and pushed them over to me. This was the first time he had taken his leg from the chair. He sat astride of the chair when he had pushed the money over, and sat swinging his purse and eyeing Joe. Well, Joseph Gargery, you look dumbfoundered. I am, said Joe, in a very decided manner. It was understood that you wanted nothing for yourself, remember? It were understood, said Joe, and it are understood. And it ever will be similar according. But what, said Mr. Jaggers, swinging his purse, what if it was in my instructions to make you a present as compensation? As compensation what for? Joe demanded. For the loss of his services. Joe laid his hand upon my shoulder with the touch of a woman. I have often thought him since, like the steam hammer that can crush a man or pat an eggshell, in his combination of strength with gentleness. Pip is that hearty welcome, said Joe, to go free with his services, to honor and fortune, as no words can tell him. But if you think as money can make compensation to me for the loss of the little child, what come to the forge and ever the best of friends? Oh dear good Joe, whom I was so ready to leave, and so unthankful to, I see you again, with your muscular blacksmith's arm before your eyes, and your broad chest heaving, and your voice dying away. Oh dear good faithful tender Joe, I feel the loving tremble of your hand upon my arm, as solemnly this day, as if it had been the rustle of an angel's wing. But I encouraged Joe at the time. I was lost in the mazes of my future fortunes, and could not retrace the bypaths we had trodden together. I begged Joe to be comforted, For as he said, we had ever been the best of friends, and as I said, we ever would be so. Joe scooped his eyes with his disengaged wrist, as if he were bent on gouging himself, but said not another word. Mr. Jaggers had looked on at this, as one who recognized in Joe the village idiot, and in me his keeper. When it was over, he said, weighing in his hand the purse he had ceased to swing. Now, Joseph Gargery, I warn you this is your last chance. No half measures with me. If you mean to take a present that I have it in charge to make you, speak out, and you shall have it. If on the contrary you mean to say here, to his great amazement, he was stopped by Joe suddenly working round him with every demonstration of a fell pugilistic purpose. Which I meant or say, cried Joe, that if you come into my place bull baiting and badgering me, come out. Which I meant or say as such, if you're a man, come on. Which I meant or say that what I meant or say and stand or fall by. I drew Joe away, and he immediately became placable, merely stating to me, in an obliging manner, and as a polite expostulatory notice to anyone whom it might happen to concern, that he were not a-going to be bull-baited and badgered in his own place. Mr. Jaggers had risen when Joe demonstrated, and had backed near the door. Without evincing any inclination to come in again, he there delivered his valedictory remarks. They were these. Well, Mr. Pip, I think the sooner you leave here as you are to be a gentleman the better. Let it stand for this day week, and you shall receive my printed address in the meantime. You can take a hackney coach at the stagecoach office in London, and come straight to me. Understand, that I express no opinion, one way or other, on the trust I undertake. I am paid for undertaking it, and I do so. Now, understand that, finally. Understand that. He was throwing his finger at both of us, and I think, would have gone on, but for his seeming to think Joe dangerous, and going off. Something came into my head which induced me to run after him, as he was going down to the Jolly Bargemen, where he had left a hired carriage. I beg your pardon, Mr. Jaggers. Halloa, said he, facing round, what's the matter? I wish to be quite right, Mr. Jaggers, and to keep to your directions, so I thought I had better ask. Would there be any objection to my taking leave of anyone I know, about here, before I go away? No, said he, looking as if he hardly understood me. I don't mean in the village only, but uptown? No, said he. No objection. I thanked him, and ran home again, and there I found that Joe had already locked the front door, and vacated the state parlor, and was seated by the kitchen fire with a hand on each knee, gazing intently at the burning coals. I too sat down before the fire and gazed at the coals, and nothing was said for a long time. My sister was in her cushioned chair in her corner, and Biddy sat at her needlework before the fire, and Joe sat next Biddy, and I sat next Joe in the corner opposite my sister. The more I looked into the glowing coals, the more incapable I became of looking at Joe. The longer the silence lasted, the more unable I felt to speak. At length I got out, Joe, have you told Biddy? No. Pip, returned Joe, still looking at the fire, and holding his knees tight, as if he had private information, that they intended to make off somewhere, which I left it to yourself, Pip. I would rather you told, Joe. Pip's a gentleman of fortune then, said Joe, and God bless him in it. Biddy dropped her work, and looked at me. Joe held his knees and looked at me. I looked at both of them. After a pause, they both heartily congratulated me, but there was a certain touch of sadness in their congratulations that I rather resented. I took it upon myself to impress Biddy and through Biddy, Joe, with the grave obligation I considered my friends under, to know nothing and say nothing about the maker of my fortune. It would all come out in good time, I observed, and in the meanwhile nothing was to be said, save that I had come into great expectations from a mysterious patron. Biddy nodded her head thoughtfully at the fire as she took up her work again, and said she would be very particular. And Joe, still detaining his knees, said, I'll be a curvily particler, Pip. And then they congratulated me again, and went on to express so much wonder at the notion of my being a gentleman, that I didn't half like it. Infinite pains were then taken by Biddy to convey to my sister some idea of what had happened. To the best of my belief, those efforts entirely failed. She laughed and nodded her head a great many times, and even repeated after Biddy the words, Pip and property. But I doubt if they had more meaning in them than an election cry, and I cannot suggest a darker picture of her state of mind. I never could have believed it without experience, but as Joe and Biddy became more at their cheerful ease again, I became quite gloomy. Dissatisfied with my fortune, of course I could not be, but it is possible that I may have been, without quite knowing it, dissatisfied with myself. Anyhow, I sat with my elbow on my knee, and my face upon my hand, looking into the fire, as those two talked about my going away, and about what they should do without me, and all that. And whenever I caught one of them looking at me, though never so pleasantly, and they often looked at me particularly Biddy, I felt offended. As if they were expressing some mistrust of me. Though heaven knows they never did by word or sign. At those times I would get up, and look out at the door, for, our kitchen door opened at once upon the night, and stood open on summer evenings to air the room. The very stars to which I then raised my eyes, I am afraid I took to be but poor, and humble stars for glittering on the rustic objects among which I had passed my life. Saturday night, said I, when we sat at our supper of bread and cheese and beer. 5 more days, and then the day before the day. They'll soon go. Yes, Pip, observed Joe, whose voice sounded hollow in his beer mug. They'll soon go. Soon, soon go, said Biddy. I have been thinking, Joe, that when I go downtown on Monday, and order my new clothes, I shall tell the tailor that I'll come and put them on there, or that I'll have them sent to Mr. Pumblecook's. It would be very disagreeable to be stared at by all the people here. Mr. and Mrs. Hubble might like to see you in your new genteel figure too, Pip, said Joe, industriously cutting his bread, with his cheese on it, in the palm of his left hand, and glancing at my untasted supper, as if he thought of the time when we used to compare slices. So might Wopsle, and the jolly bargeman might take it as a compliment. That's just what I don't want, Joe. They would make such a business of it, such a coarse and common business, that I couldn't bear myself. Ah, that indeed, Pip, said Joe. If you couldn't bear yourself, Biddy asked me here, as she sat holding my sister's plate, have you thought about when you'll show yourself to Mr. Gargery, and your sister, and me? You will show yourself to us, won't you? Biddy, I returned with some resentment, you are so exceedingly quick that it's difficult to keep up with you. She always were quick, observed Joe. If you had waited another moment, Biddy, you would have heard me say that I shall bring my clothes here in a bundle one evening, most likely on the evening, before I go away. Biddy said no more. Handsomely forgiving her, I soon exchanged an affectionate good night with her and Joe, and went up to bed. When I got into my little room, I sat down, and took a long look at it, as a mean little room, that I should soon be parted from and raised above, forever. It was furnished with fresh young remembrances too, and even at the same moment I fell into much the same confused division of mind between it, and the better rooms to which I was going, as I had been in so often between the Forge and Miss Havisham's, and Biddy and Estella. The sun had been shining brightly all day on the roof of my attic, and the room was warm. As I put the window open and stood looking out, I saw Joe come slowly forth at the dark door below, and take a turn or two in the air, and then I saw Biddy come, and bring him a pipe, and light it for him. He never smoked so late, and it seemed to hint to me that he wanted comforting, for some reason or other. He presently stood at the door immediately beneath me, smoking his pipe, and Biddy stood there too, quietly talking to him, and I knew that they talked of me, for I heard my name mentioned in an endearing tone by both of them more than once. I would not have listened for more, if I could have heard more. So, I drew away from the window, and sat down in my one chair by the bedside, feeling it very sorrowful and strange, that this first night of my bright fortunes, should be the loneliest I had ever known. Looking towards the open window, I saw light wreaths from Joe's Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.